Hi, everyone. You're listening to The Kelly Joe Show on Talk Jive Radio, a Damn Indian production distributed by the Institute for Native Arts and Media, a 501c3 nonprofit organization based in Norman, Oklahoma. The views and opinions expressed in this segment are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect those of the INAM organization. Thanks so much for tuning in. We've got some really special guests here. And one of the topics that we talked about in one of our previous segments that you can catch wherever you get your podcast is the increase in hate crimes against Jewish people. And so I wanted to learn more about it. And so I contacted the Anti-Defamation League. And with us today is Temma Smith. She's the Director of Jewish Outreach and Partnership. And Kevin Altman, he's the Assistant Director of Communications. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having us. We're just really excited to be here with you.
Now, I think let's talk a little bit about your organization and where you guys are based, and just a little bit of background about the Anti-Defamation League.
Sure. So Anti-Defamation League, or as I will call it probably for the rest of our time together today, ADL, was founded in the wake of the lynching of a Jewish businessman, Leo Frank, over 100 years ago. Our mission then and to this day what is to stop the defamation of the Jewish people and to secure justice and fair treatment to all. And so we work across the country as well as internationally. We have our sort of head office is based in New York, but we have regional offices across the country, as well as a presence in Europe, in Latin America, as well as in Israel. We also maintain close relationships with Jewish organizations across the globe and work very closely on issues, recognizing, of course, that what happens in the U.S. is not isolated to the U.S. And what happens outside the U.S. is not isolated to outside the U.S. And so we really work across the landscape. We value very closely doing communal partnerships with both inside the Jewish community, but also beyond with organizations with shared missions and values as ours. And our goal really is to sort of paraphrase that famous saying, none of us are free till all of us are free. Our mission is really recognizing that our lens on this work, of course, is around anti-Semitism and the Jewish people, but that work is not done alone. That work, Jews did not create anti-Semitism, like other people did not create the hatreds and oppressions that face them. And so we're really stronger when we empower each other and educate each other to fight those forms of hate and bias that our communities face.
What is the Jewish population worldwide? Because it's, I mean, just as an American Indian, there's only about maybe 2 million-ish of us. There's really not that many. So what's the Jewish population like in here in the United States and across the globe?
Great question. The Jewish community really is tiny. When we look at the number of Jews across the world, there are 15 to 20 million Jews across the world. About half of them live currently in Israel, and the vast majority of the other half live in the U.S. with other significant populations in Canada, in France, and other such countries. The American Jewish community is in the millions and is, but proportionally is a very small percentage of the U.S. Population, about 7 million Jews in the U.S. So that is a very small fragment of the total U.S. population. So we also are a very small community. It's less than 2% of the total U.S. population. And one thing that I think we share with your community is that our numbers were decimated by genocide. The Jewish community today has not recuperated to pre-Holocaust numbers. We are still sitting at a lower global Jewish population than we were before 1939. So really sort of a small community that's been really heavily marked and traumatized by having such a significant population become victimized by hatred, and victimized to the point that our community has never recuperated its numbers.
And continue to experience that crazy hatred because it's so ingrained in this I say non-Indian, non-Jewish community, where it's like, oh, it's okay because they've been oppressed all these years and that's just what we do to them.
Right. And this is the thing that is very challenging, is that when these sorts of oppressions and hatreds bake themselves into the societies that we live in, a lot of the time it's not even conscious. And that's not, obviously, there are many people who are consciously racist and anti-Semitic, that I'm not, you know, dismissing that. But some of the things that people don't realize are the ways that these things can rise to the surface of people who are otherwise well-meaning. And so I think that's one of the things that we really think about closely in terms of our educational mission and our advocacy mission, is how to make sure that people are beginning to unpack these, in the case of the Jewish community, literally thousands of years of history of anti-Semitism that just persist, because when it's unchallenged, it persists whether people believe that they hold these views or not. And we're seeing some of that now, really, in some of the more virulent forms of anti-Semitism that we're facing, but also in things like, and you know, I'm sure we're going to get to this at some point in this conversation, Kanye West, and the really horrible, blatantly anti-Semitic things that he is saying, and the fact that some of those things had gone unchallenged. He's been saying things for years, and of course he's gone on sort of a more aggressive spree lately, but in one of the things that very much concerns me when I look at it is the people who look and say, oh, interesting, maybe he does have a point. Right. And that is how those issues sort of bubble to the surface. Well-meaning people aren't necessarily aware that they hold the seeds of those anti-Semitic prejudices in them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you jumped right into it, because that's absolutely what precipitated this, me contacting you, is because it's so striking that even now, even after all this time, and Kanye West, I mean, I have very strong opinions about why I feel like he doesn't need to disparage any other group, you know, at all, especially when you're a part of a group that's been historically persecuted, right? Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. But his rhetoric and how it has consistently ramped up, and how it's consistently become more abusive towards Jewish people, towards women, towards his wife, towards his ex, you know, towards the community at large. It's like we're all watching him unravel, and nobody has really been calling him out, especially when his words are targeting the Jewish community, because he's got, what, 30 million followers? I mean, that's just an absolute crazy thing when you think that he's basically turning this spotlight onto this community that doesn't deserve it and didn't provoke it.
Right. And I think one of the things, you know, one of the reasons that I talked so much about the population and the tiny population of Jews, Kanye West has considerably more followers, or had, I know he's suspended from Twitter at the moment, but had considerably more followers on Twitter than there are Jews in the entire world. Let that sink in for a second. More followers, more people seeing and reading his tweets than there are Jews, period. And one of the things that, you know, the anti-Semitism we know is not new. And the recent rise in anti-Semitism is something, and I'm glad that you called us at this moment, that that there's so much to talk about right now. Kanye West, yay, is one of the most visible people on the planet. And he actually thought that he could behave with impunity. You might remember his line, I can say anti-Semitic, whatever, and Adidas can't drop me, right? He basically challenged it. He said, I can say whatever I want about the Jews. And I should also add, you know, you mentioned his misogyny. He's also said really horrific things about the Black community as well. And we need to be forcefully calling out all of the hate that man has been spewing for years. Of course, I think that it has accelerated rapidly in the midst of what seems to be a mental health crisis. And I also am very concerned with the people who are continuing to give him a platform, knowing what is likely to come out of his mouth and recognizing the hate in what he is saying. One of the things that was encouraging for us, though, at ADL is that we started very quickly to organize, to educate, to bring people together around tables, to ask the corporations who essentially are giving Kanye money through these partnerships to distance themselves, really trying to challenge his assertion that he can say whatever he wants against the Jews and nothing will happen. And in what ended up happening, we launched a campaign specifically targeting Adidas, which was his largest partnership, with Run Away From Hate was the hashtag. And we engaged the leadership of the corporations, Balenciaga, CAA, Gap, Vogue, Adidas. Let me rephrase that. Balenciaga, CAA, Gap, Vogue, and others had distanced themselves from him and some going as far as announcing at that point that they were terminating their partnerships right out of the gate, but Adidas was silent. And so we launched that campaign, engaged the leadership, and really held talks. And as we all know, Adidas ended up dropping him and that $2 billion partnership. The reality is that words have real word impact. And I'm not just talking about the impact that now it's had in Kanye losing that partnership, but I'm talking about the hateful impact on what we're seeing in the wake of it against Jews. We know that in the weeks following, Kyrie Irving has boosted a movie full of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Marcus Stroman, a pitcher in Major League Baseball, who is close to my heart, or was close to my heart, I should say, from when he was a Toronto Blue Jay. That's my hometown. He also tweeted, you know, we all know who controls things. And then he tried to roll it back and say he meant the media. We all know he didn't mean the media. We're seeing these other celebrity figures parrot these tropes. And that has consequences. In 2021, we saw nearly triple the number of anti-Jewish acts of harassment, vandalism, and violence. And that's like a 300% increase. There's a through line from what happened in Charlottesville with the march to Pittsburgh. We just marked the anniversary of the horrible Tree of Life synagogue massacre, to Poway, the synagogue shooting there, Colleyville, the hostage taking, Washington, D.C. with January 6th, and Los Angeles, where we've seen banners flown by white supremacist organizations over the highway saying Kanye was right. This is not something that we can sleep on. These aren't the rantings of somebody in a mental health crisis. You know, many people have made the point, and I won't be the first or last person to make it. A mental health crisis does not create these opinions. And a mental health crisis most certainly does not give a platform to these opinions. Those are decisions that we are making as a society to platform them, irregardless. Ooh, I said irregardless. I take that back. Regardless of the consequences, to a community that has been repeatedly violently targeted. And that's, to me, extremely scary. And what worries me the most is that a lot of people don't seem to believe that what happens on social media translates to the real world. What happens on a podcast translates to the real world. We can't draw that line anymore. It was never there, and most certainly is not there today.
You know, and it's interesting too, because I mean, when you started going down that list, I was just sitting there going, oh my gosh, yes, 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 and yes. I mean, that's comparable to school shooting numbers. You know, when you really think about it and think about this assault on the Jewish community, that's continued. That's never stopped. It's never stopped. Not even after Hitler and everything, and where we had a lot of our Jewish family members coming to the United States and trying to build their new lives. It hasn't gotten any better. I mean, not in that kind of way. And there's this ramped up rhetoric that people feel like it's okay to say these things. It's okay to act this way because Ye does it.
Absolutely. And, you know, not to come back again to the size of our community, one of the things that really strikes me, and I will say, like, as a person, I did not grow up deeply involved in the Jewish community. My father is not Jewish. My father is actually Black, and grew up with the legacy of American racism, anti-Black racism. And so, you know, hearing all of these stories is very close to my heart and my experience. My mother grew up here, born not long after World War II. We lost a significant amount of family and brought family over after the war. These are our recent stories, you know, and I think, and so that legacy is recent, and it, like you said, it hasn't gone away. And when we think also about that tiny number, I remember when Colleyville happened and that hostage taking was it was happening in real time. The first thing that I did was look for the rabbi on Facebook to see how many people I knew who knew him. And it was a lot, right? And that is the reality of a small community, is that I know the daughter-in-law of one of the victims in Pittsburgh. It's so closely ingrained. It was the Joyce Feinberg, who was killed in Pittsburgh, grew up in Toronto, going to my synagogue. She was married at my synagogue. And that's the reality, is that, you know, people like to see this as sort of, well, it's happening in these pockets and these are isolated incidents, but it's not. When you're a small community, it hits so hard at your heart when these things happen. I think it's really important, though, to remember, and I think what you having us on today really should recall to all of us, though, is that we do this work to fight hate in coalition and in support of shared understanding. We work with other communities. We are not alone. That is what keeps me going, is knowing that the very many of us who are facing increased hate, increased hateful rhetoric. You know, I know the Native community, of course, is also targeted by the white supremacists who want to target us. That issues close to our hearts, like the preservation of American democracy, are so important for preserving not just Native rights, but also some of the tribal sovereignties that have been given by that system. These are really important issues that are all at risk right now. Of course, I'm thinking we have the midterms next week. Everybody, please go vote. I know this is airing before then. Please go vote. I've got my ballot locked and loaded. I vote absentee, so I've got my ballot locked and loaded. And some of the things that are really, really facing us right now are really tamping down this tide of white supremacist violence. I know in Oklahoma, you have robust white supremacist prison gangs with the presence of some of the most notorious gangs. The Patriot Front is active in Oklahoma, and not only are they anti-Semitic, but they celebrate the conquering of America from indigenous people. That's part of what their animating philosophy is. What is a threat to us is a threat to you, and what is a threat to you is a threat to us. And that is something that we at ADL take extremely seriously and want to show up in partnership with communities like your community to make sure that we are sort of presenting a united front in support of our dignity and safety as people being targeted right now.
You know, and I love that. I love that message, especially, you know, here in Oklahoma, we have a lot of incidents of death by law enforcement in our American Indian communities. I'm from Anadarko. It's the Indian capital of the nation. And, you know, here in Oklahoma, we have 39 federally recognized sovereign American Indian nations. And when you look at the total population of Oklahoma per capita and the number of Indians that live here, you would think that we would have a magnified voice. You would think that we would have this platform that says, hey, you know, this is Indian country. And it is, because there's so many Indians here, but we're not able to really stand up. A lot of that thing, like just Oklahoma, what were we? Native America. That was our logo, right? Our you know, our mantra. And now it's, I don't know, imagine that. They're taking all of the native out of Oklahoma in the government and kind of ignoring that this is Indian country. And so there are a lot of parallels with our communities. And that was one of the things that I did want to ask you, and I'm glad that you hit on that, are there a lot of issues facing I should say public issues, because the private issues are like publicly, are there a lot of public threats against the Jewish community in Oklahoma, or are we so just like in our proud boy, good old boy, you know, accepted racism of the day, as I have an Oklahoma Sooner shirt on? I get the irony, y'all. Oh, I get it. But and that's my alma mater too. But do we even have those kind of public threats here that the ADL hears? Are we at that level, or is it just like, we don't even need to complain about it because we just accept it so here in Oklahoma?
Yeah, great question. We do track, our Center on Extremism tracks extremist threats and violence. And as I mentioned, we are tracking, and we have a very recent report that came out that you can find on our website about white supremacist prison gangs that are extremely active in Oklahoma. From January 2022 to August 2022, so up until our most recent sort of closed data for the year, we know that there was a total of 100 extremist incidents in Oklahoma, the vast majority of which were incidents of white supremacist propaganda. These are incidents that we have not just tracked, but we have verified. We have documented 97 instances of white supremacist propaganda distribution. So 97 of those 100. The majority were banner drops, stickers, and flyers from the Patriot Front. And other pieces of propaganda that were distributed were linked to White Lives Matter. And just to recall something I mentioned earlier, of course, the Patriot Front, virulently anti-Semitic, but also some of that propaganda that they're circulating says not stolen, conquered, which of course is a reference to the
land run.
The land, yes.
The land. I went to a protest last year, and just real quick, it's kind of a funny story. So they have this huge monument in downtown Oklahoma City, in like the canal area, right? And you know, we're all about land back, and hey, we want it back, and we have treaties that are in place that says, and you know, there's all these things that are going on. And so they had a rally out there, and those groups were out there, and it was hot. They were dressed in leather. and it's Oklahoma hot, y'all. Like, it's 115 degrees out there. It's hot. And they're marching around these gigantic land run pieces, right? I mean, these things are huge. They had like these massive cranes put them there. And I'm like, they were like, well, you're not taking those anywhere. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding. Nobody's taking those anywhere. Like, I guess they thought that the Indians that were going to go down there and pray and protest were going to somehow magically use our magic Indian powers and rise those things up and take them out. I mean, thanks for thinking that we're these super magic Indians, but that just wasn't going to happen. And there wasn't anybody that was going to, you know, deface these giant, you know, it wasn't about that, but yet that threat was there, and right, their rhetoric was there, the way that they walked around, and just it was all right there in your face. And that whole, you know, conquered, that whole, you know, you need to accept your conquered people. That's just not who we are.
Right, absolutely. And you know, when thinking of the ways, the specific ways as well, and I appreciate your sense of humor about it, that's how I cope with so much of this, and how I'm able to do the work that I do is you have to maintain that ability to laugh, because when I hear things like this, it makes me want to cry. We can imagine the Jewish community of Oklahoma is not very big. And in that same time frame, we documented 6 incidents of white lives explicitly anti-Semitic, not just white supremacists. The White Lives Matter Network distributed propaganda in a Jewish retirement community. A swastika was found in a dorm room of a Jewish college student at the University of Oklahoma, and a Jewish retirement home received an anti-Semitic bomb threat. They are targeting, and this is the thing that I really, if we take away one thing, they are targeting the vulnerable members of the community. Retirement homes, schools, individual students. This is horrifying. I will never in a million years get the image of preschool children being led out of preschools because they had received bomb threats en masse. That is horrifying. And that is the reality. Very often people would ask me, I worked in synagogues before I came to ADL, and people would ask me like, oh, like these threats against the Jewish community, what does that actually mean? And I said, have you ever been trained on, like, do you have a red folder for what to do if you receive a bomb threat at work? Like, is that just sitting under every phone in the office? Because I don't think it is. And until you can understand that every day when I walk into or out of my work, I am looking for a threat, you cannot understand what it means to live as a Jew today. And that was, and a lot of my career has been in Canada. That's in Canada, where gun violence is much lower. And that was still a very, very, very present risk in Toronto. And that makes me really sad, actually, like extremely sad. And so when we think of the way that people are targeted, they are choosing vulnerable populations to go after. And that is, and one of the things that I also should flag is anti-Semitism, the way that anti-Semitism works is by making it look like they're going after powerful people. That it, to make it look like by targeting Jews, they're targeting a power structure. That Jews, that was what was behind Kanye's rhetoric, right? Was that he's not taking it out on somebody weak, he's taking it out on the people who control things. And that is just not true. It's just not true. And that's some of the ways that anti-Semitism creeps in. When people look at that and say, oh, he might have a point, that's because they've been primed with anti-Semitic ideas. I know we're probably running low on time,
time doesn't mean anything to me because we're gonna finish out what we got to say here. So, but just take a couple of extra minutes. You know, one of the things that strikes me too in that vulnerable population, and especially here in the United States, are your synagogues and our churches. Our Black churches are continuing to be targeted. Synagogues are continuing to be targeted, and those people are there to pray. I mean, and that's the thing that's most offensive to me with a lot of this American white nationalism, and is that, you know, the Lord is my shepherd and God guns gumption and, you know, whatever. But when it comes down to it, they have the nerve to attack us in church. We're with Native American churches, with sweat lodges, however you choose to pray, however you choose to communicate with your creator, you should be able to do that in a safe place. And for a lot of our people, that is exactly where they're targeted, is that safe place.
Absolutely. And there's a through line when we think about the history of hate targeting our communities, of targeting us at prayer. We can look to myriad incidents. The two, as you were talking, that popped into my head are civil rights era, but you know, we still see them obviously today, but the bombing of the church and the synagogue in the South, the four little girls, I am forgetting the name of the film that they just made about that. That was just so powerful. And then, of course, the bombing of the temple in Atlanta, the Jewish synagogue there. And really, you know, when we think about it, those are the moral centers of our community. They are targeting the moral centers of our community. And that is terrifying to me. This is an attack not just on us as people. It's an attack on our way of being, and it's an attack on the values that we hold, that they see as a threat to their way of life. And so that's scary, and that's where we are as communities today. And that's why we need to be coming together. That's why we need to be talking. We know that the American Jewish community and the Native American communities share a common bond in preserving and celebrating our identities, our heritages, the languages of our ancestors, despite efforts by people to take all of that away from us. The American Jewish story is one of fighting against the odds to keep those things and to resurrect them, especially in the wake of the Holocaust. That is part of our story. And when I think about what we are trying to do as a people, it really is to say, hey, you hate us? We're still here. We're still That's here. Right. We're still fighting. And we are here. We believe in who we are. And we have a vision of equality and equity across this country.
Thank you so much. I know we're running over on time, and Kevin's over here mean mugging me, so we gotta hop up, but thank you so much for the invitation, for coming on the show, for accepting the invitation, and we'll definitely talk again in the future. You've been listening to the Kelly Jo Show on Talk Jive Radio, a Damn Indian production distributed by the Institute for Native Arts and Media. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect those of the INAM organization. For more information or to donate, email nativeartsandmediainstitute@gmail.com. You can always catch any episodes that you missed wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for your support.